This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
It's time for real stories from those who make our region and our country their home. Time for Making Yourself at Home, thanks to the support from the Ethnic Communities Development Fund.
Good morning, Taranaki. This is Making Yourself at Home at 104.4 FM. Your voice, your choice. I am your host, Brian, from the United States, and I'm joined by my other co-hosts, Alina from Romania and Maria from Venezuela. Got to get that down.
And good today morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Thank you, Brian, for such a nice presentation.
My pleasure. And I will say hello to our special guest, Amelie from Belgium, and allow Alina to give her bio.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. Good morning, everyone. Here is Alina. I'm originally from Romania, and it's my pleasure today to introduce Amelie. Amelie, she's a dear friend of mine that I know for quite a while. Amelie, she is a beauty and self-care therapist. She's a skin therapist, makeup artist, and confidence coach, originally from Belgium and now based in New Zealand, New Plymouth. With over a decade of experience in the beauty industry, she blends European skin expertise with a holistic, real-life approach to help women feel confident in their skin and grounded in themselves. Sounds beautiful, Amelie.
Good morning, Elena.
Good morning, good morning. Nice to see you, and thank you so much for saying yes to my invitation last night.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, we had a cancellation, so... Thank you, Amelie, for being here.
What are friends for?
Yes, always. Yeah.
How did you two meet?
Thank you.
How did you two
cross paths? How did we meet? Yeah, I think we met through the Migrant Connection.
But did we meet at Georgie's Women's Circle?
Yes, and we have a common friend, Georgiana, who is also from Romania. And we were going together to a lot of women's circles.
Yes, and I knew Georgie from Hamilton when her and I were both living there.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Big connections, right?
Yes.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So you, I know you've been to the radio before, but I know a lot of things happened meanwhile. I think it was like 4 or 5 years ago, maybe?
Yes, I think it was in 2021. I had just opened my business.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about you, because I know that Maria and Brian don't know you maybe so well. When did you arrive first in New Zealand?
So I came in 2018. Well, first in New Zealand, I came as an exchange student. After I finished high school in 2009, I came for a year. I did a year on a dairy farm, and I went to Manamata College for a year. Then I went back home, met my husband, and we moved together in 2018. We were first in Hamilton, and then 5 years ago, we moved to Taranaki.
Mm, beautiful. So how come you choose Taranaki?
We came originally for the green school because we have a beautiful baby boy. Mm-hmm. And actually we realized now that he is 7 and no longer 1, you know, now he's a bit more of an actual person with a character and with who he is and how he works and studies. Yeah. So he's not going to go to the green school because we don't think he's the right fit. But originally we came to visit the green school and fell in love with New Plymouth, and we stand behind that choice 1,000%. We think New Plymouth is an amazing place to live in.
Mm. Wow, that's amazing.
Thank you.
So coming from very far away for a green place, obviously for you and your family.
Yes.
And how are you settling at the moment? How do you enjoy that?
Oh, New Zealand has treating us so well. We're eligible for citizenship this year, which we're very excited for. To have that Kiwi passport, and then next time somebody picks up on an accent, I'll be able to say, no, but I'm a Kiwi. Because we all get, where are you from?
Yeah.
No, New Zealand has been amazing. We've had, both my husband and I, professional opportunities that we wouldn't have had we stayed over in Europe. My husband now works for a US-based company. We have an amazing house, and we just love life. I think that in New Zealand, people take the time to take the time.
Yeah.
And we just really enjoy that spaciousness that comes with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as you said, you know, we all like to spend time here in New Zealand, especially for families. It's amazing to have that time to spend, especially with your son, right?
Yes. Yeah. And there's no commute. I mean, traffic hours is what, 20 minutes? And even then it takes like 20 minutes to get somewhere, right? Yeah, so there's no strain on your everyday life because of commute or because of how many people are there. You never really queue at the supermarket, and all of that is time that you actually get back to spend with your family, and it reduces stress, and when stress is reduced, life is better. So yeah, we're loving New Zealand, and specifically New Plymouth.
Yeah, and I know you also have a big story about confidence and beauty, and I know you've been through a lot of industry, and I really like your work and the cocoon that you created here in New Plymouth. And I was going also to Emily. She did one time a face massage for me. It was really nice, and now I know how to smile without wrinkles.
That's not quite true. We can't erase wrinkles.
No, we can't, right? Yeah. Exactly. I can't erase my wrinkles. Would you like to tell us a little bit about your journey and from Belgium to New Zealand, especially for the beauty industry?
Yes, of course. I fell in love with makeup when I was 3, playing with my Barbies, and I would steal my mom's makeup and add more makeup onto my Barbies. And my mom is a chemistry engineer, so she's a biochemistry engineer. And for her, beauty is not supposed to be a job, it's supposed to be a passion. And I fought for my dream. I ended up going into beauty school. So I had some money that came my way, and I said, Mom, I'm gonna drop out of uni, I'm gonna go to beauty school. Well, I'm gonna study makeup. And my mom said, well, hair always grows back. So if you wanna do that, go to beauty school so that you always have a job, because people's hair always grows back. I was like, cool, okay. And then she said that she would pay for my second year if I passed. So I went to beauty school, and there I actually was terrible at the study of skin. I was really bad at it. The way that it was taught just made no sense. And then it kind of became a bit of an ego thing where I was like, I'm too smart not to pass this. So let's go and find the connections that I'm missing to make skin make sense. And that's really when I fell into histology, which is the study of skin. And we are now 14 years later, and I'm still as in love with skin than I did fall in love back then, and it's been an amazing experience. Through beauty school, I developed some allergies to preservatives, etc. I had to be pulled from the treatment room, and that's how I found my way to clean beauty, which is what I specialize now, because we thought I would not be able to work hands-on with clients. And after beauty school, I did go to makeup school for 2 years. I went to a tertiary school in France where I specialized in special effects makeup. So I would do multi-pieces prosthetics. I learned how to do hair notching for, I think we say pastiches in English, for like fake beards and fake mustaches, etc. It was a lot of fun. I worked on movie sets and TV shows back in Europe. My first job in beauty itself was as a mani-pedi girl in a really high-end luxury institute before all of the movie industry. And then when we moved to New Zealand, I worked as a counter manager for Dermalogica, which was what I was trained with back in Belgium. And it's not clean, but I do love Dermalogica because they deliver fantastic results, and they really do train their staff in a way that not that many brands do. And I got pregnant within 3 months of moving to New Zealand.
Wow, amazing.
And working next to a perfume stand when you're pregnant is not the nicest thing on earth. So I ended up quitting my job, having my baby boy. I worked as a stylist in a kilt clothing store for a little bit, using my knowledge of colors back from makeup for clothes. And I had severe postpartum depression, but nobody knew, because when I had to get ready, I could actually look very, you know, awake, healthy, trustworthy, etc., because I knew my skin and because I could do makeup so well. And I realized that I actually wanted to empower women to be able to show up in their lives in a way where they looked rested, empowered, and confident, where it only took them less than 10 minutes. Because when you're a mom, the time that you have available to get ready just drastically changes. It used to take me an hour, and it was so beautiful. I had like my cup of tea, I would do my hair, and then my makeup. And then, you know, when I became a mom, brushing my teeth was actually really hard, and my shower would be interrupted. And yeah, and then I decided to launch my business based on that. It took a little while, and now it's very successful. And I shared on my stories this morning a photo of me when I just woke up. Trust me, it's a bit scary to right now.
Yeah.
And how it took me about 20 minutes to actually get there, including shower, teeth, skincare, getting dressed and makeup. And that's kind of the power of knowing everything about you. And that way you don't have to make any decisions before you actually start your day, which I think is pretty fabulous for your nervous system.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, I didn't know how much about skins you can know. You say have a question. So you set up a business in here in New Zealand. Could you tell about probably the challenges of setting a business in so small country, and how help you to along your life journey and adapting to this country?
So I think one of the biggest hurdle when you open a business in a new place is that you don't know anybody. So there's nobody to actually come and support your business just because it's you. You actually have to build that trust from the ground up. And also opening your business in your second language means that you actually have to relearn your job in that language.
Exactly right.
Yes. Yeah. Fun fact, the first makeup lesson I actually taught in English, my client was Russian. And so we couldn't help each other in English, right? And I needed to be able to say, you just dab the product on your face. And all I could come up with, you're going to stab your face with the brush. Because that's like the same gesture, right? Just not quite the same intention. And we still laugh about it, about I had to relearn that. Yeah. And then there are things that you phrase in a way that just doesn't land the same in English. And then obviously I'm science-backed, and then I had to write all of my documentation and all of the resources for my clients in that second language before AI existed, which was a very interesting journey.
Lots of jobs, right?
Yes. My first follow-up for a client took me 18 hours to write. Let me just say that my profitability on that one was very low. but it was a stepping
stone. I imagine
18
hours is quite a lot. Yeah.
Yes, no, she didn't pay enough for how much hours I spent on that. But it was a lot of fun. And I think one of the biggest challenge for me there was actually that I didn't used to understand how a Kiwi woman makes a purchasing decision. Because obviously what you present to somebody, depending on the cultural background that you're in, is going to be very different. And with the different types of buyer that you have, you can pull on different levers, but you actually don't have that same baseline of levers in culture when you're in a different country. And I think that's one of the biggest challenge as a business owner when you're not in your native country.
Yeah.
I'd like to learn more about that, that customer behavior and how you figure out the difference between, say, an upscale European buyer or customer behaves differently than the common New Plymouth citizen, resident?
Well, so we obviously all have our own biases, right? And so it's easiest to sell to the customer who works the way that you do. Normally people buy based off of emotion, but that's only one of the five or four types of buyer that they are. And I'm a very logistical buyer. So I'm going to go in, I'm going to compare price, I'm going to compare features, and it's going to be a very, I need this, and this is what I wanted to do. So which one is going to fit most what I want? And then you also have opportunistic buyer who have a need right here and now, and they're exposed to the thing right here and now, and then they purchase it. And then you have emotional people who are looking to fill something in their lives, and then they buy it. And we always say that you have to sell the transformation and not the features, right? So if you're buying a seat in first class, which is the example that my business coach gave me, you're not buying your seat in first class because of however many centimeters of legroom you're going to have and because of however many thickness of memory foam you have. You buy it for the experience, and you buy it because if you're traveling for business, you're going to be able to sleep on the plane, and thus you're going to be able to be rested and perform at your best when you arrive. So you're selling the transformation, not the features. And learning to do that in your second language and learning to when you're so close to what it is that you're doing because you know the process is very hard to kind of have that bird's eye view of the transformation that you offer. And I think that part is, we all struggle with this as business owners because selling yourself is hard. Mm-hmm. And then when you add the fact that you can't tap into that blueprint that we all have is very interesting. So for instance, Dr. Seuss is a very common, you know, stories that people grow up with here, and same as nursery rhymes. And when my son was little, we were gifted a book that we would use to read to him, but it turned out to be nursery rhymes. We just read it to him like poems because we had no clue that they were nursery rhymes. And sometimes in advertisement, etc., they tap into that knowledge that we gathered as a child that creates your unconscious blueprint and then sells you things. Does that make sense, Brian?
Definitely.
Wow.
Great.
Interesting. Great answer. I'm already, Emily, you should do a course on that, especially with the transformation. Because obviously this is what the clients want, right? To have a transformation and they want to see a result.
Yes, well, I paid top dollar to learn this. I've been paying top dollar for business coaching since 2020, so we can all appreciate that I did learn something from those experiences.
And you did a lot. I mean, it's amazing to see how much you were growing and how much your cocoon was growing in all this time. And yeah, I remember at the beginning, you know, when you have one or two clients and how much effort you put in. And you were telling us how many challenges you had with the customers, you know, that... I'm not paid, you know, first 2 years, I think, from what I heard from you is like, I would like to be paid, right? How was that journey for you? Like,
I think you get to be paid in many different ways from your business, because obviously as business owner, you reinvest in your business for growth.
Yes.
And I am very privileged that with my husband being a software engineer, we actually do really well without my income. Mm-hmm. And so I'm still at a stage where I funnel everything into my business. I think this is officially the last year that this is happening.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And I do pay myself a little bit every month, but not a lot because I choose to upskill. And I genuinely think that knowledge is the one thing that nobody can strip away from you.
Yeah.
And so for me to have been able to upskill so much for 5 years in business has been an incredible experience. And I genuinely think that running a business is personal development on steroids.
Yeah.
Because if you have visibility issues, that's going to come up. If you have money mindset issues, that's going to come up. If you have self-trust issues, that's going to come up. And so you kind of get to go and address all of those, confront your biases, your privilege, your limiting beliefs, and grow your business. And your business is growing at the pace that your nervous system can allow you to grow with. And this is freaking, it's a privilege,
it
really.
Yes.
And now I'm actually fully booked until the end of July in person.
Oh, really? That's amazing. Wow.
I sold my biggest package. I closed my biggest package on Monday last week, which is really exciting. So now the only way to work with me really is online. I have a makeup program that kicks off next month. And I have my first B2B offer coming in October,
which is
exciting. And so I'm just growing and expanding. And I also have physical limitation because I have chronic tendinitis in both hands. And so that pushed me to grow online. And I have an online membership as well. So I'm technically running three businesses at the same time, I think. But I think that's the reality for a lot of entrepreneurs now, is that we all kind of diversify a little bit more. What about you, Brian? Because you're also an entrepreneur, and I'm sure you're also running.
Oh yeah, Brian, tell us
more.
Oh gosh.
A few things.
Put me on the spot. No.
no pressure.
Right. So, I'm mostly doing just creative work so far. I am going to be launching a website this week, hopefully. That is a directory for certain types of New Zealand businesses, and so I'm gonna be releasing kind of the minimum viable product this week, and then going through the steps to actually monetize it. So I've not yet completely jumped into running a business.
Ah.
No. The other, I've done just other creative work so far, and just allowed work to come to me when it comes to my consulting work. So I wouldn't have considered myself an entrepreneur just yet, since I haven't really delivered a real finished product.
Well, entrepreneurial mind counts.
Certainly have that. Certainly look for opportunities.
Yeah.
In the conversation we had before recording, and you just touched upon it, was the wearing of multiple hats.
Yeah.
Having multiple positions within your own business. If you'd like to unpack how you manage that and your experience, your learning process of figuring out how to manage the various responsibilities within your business.
Mm. I'm going to preface this by saying that I have high functioning anxiety, which
it's an opportunity, obviously, right?
Yes, it is an opportunity. So it means that you're great under pressure.
Mm.
The problem is that you create your own pressure. Which is also great because then it creates momentum.
Yes.
But also you kind of have to look after your mental health and your stress levels in the process. And one of the biggest things that I landed on to support me in this is that there are very few decisions in life that are permanent.
Mm.
And you're going to learn through doing the thing. And that at the time you make the right decision with the amount of knowledge, the amount of time, and the amount of money that you have. And if you're 3 years later and you look back at the decision that you made then with resentment, if you feel resentment, that's valid. And also, you still did the best that you could at the time that you made that decision.
Yeah.
And so giving yourself the right to fail, I think, is the biggest thing. Entrepreneurs all have a complete cemetery of failed ideas and failed process and failed programs that did not sell. Back in 2024, well, actually back in 2023, I ran an online program called A Journey Back to You, which I did the things by the book, right? So I pre-sold it before I built it. It sold out within 48 hours, which was insane.
Amazing.
And then I built the thing, and I think clients paid at the time $360, and I had four people in there. It ended up taking me 1,200 hours to build that program. So I was not paid again enough for the work that I did. And then I launched it publicly in 2024, and that was supposed to be the big break of my business. It was supposed to be bankrolling money, paying me, etc. I didn't make a single dollar. Nobody signed up to this.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, I had pre-sold it, I had proofed the idea.
Mm.
And it was horrible. Mm. It was so hard. And I was fused with pavement. It was really, really hard. I think I cried for like 2 months. I'm not going to lie. It was horrible. And then, you know, you have a choice. How do I get up from here?
Mm.
And how do I move? And then a client of mine sent me a message to say, hey, I keep messaging you to ask you questions. Do you have something where I would pay a fee and I actually kind of have access to you ongoingly to ask questions? Because if you don't have that, then you should totally have that. And it was my birthday. I was feeling completely depressed with the failure of A Journey Back to You version 2.0. And I was like, you know what? I'll create this for you. And I created Bubble. So in 2024, which still exists. I have paying clients in Bubble. And it's evolved so much since I launched it. And that was one moment where I really just followed a nudge from a client. I was like, yeah, I can do this. I don't have to know what it's going to turn into. I just have to say yes and build it as I go, which I did. And there's been so many iterations. We've been in three different platforms. It used to be completely asynchronous. I struggle with that word in English. and now we do have four lives a month and some products review, and it just evolved beautifully. And you know, when we start something, we want to see the finished product when we start it, but we actually can't have that already built. But society tells us that we should, because it's skewed through Instagram and TikTok and all of the things. And you see those within 3 months I was fully booked, but
yeah, you see that online, right?
Yes,
everybody's saying that. I'm like, oh
yes,
it's a lot of pressure, right?
And there's a saying that says it takes 10 years to create an overnight success. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably a lot more realistic than be, you know, fully booked in 3 months. And the landscape has changed. You know, there's so much more people online now, and you used to be able to get great visibility with $5 meta ads, and now all of that has changed because everybody's doing it. And we go back to, if you're spammed with everybody doing the same thing, then nobody is standing out. Mm-hmm.
I have a question. Let's go back a little bit about what you say about your challenge when you had your first child, and how you manage to overcome that using your skills and your knowledge. Yeah, tell a little bit more about that. What you can tell to the new people coming to New Zealand, try to adjust that, how they can use all the knowledge, skill they bring to overcome all of these challenges, pregnancy, adjusting new country. What are the advice for those people?
Well, if you can not have a baby and move to a different place within the same 12 months, I would first start with recommending that. Because that was definitely a journey. That's a big question. Just give me a second to tune into that one.
It's a great one, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. I think not forgetting yourself in the process. Because when we move to a new place, we have a deep desire of finding community. And for some of us, that comes through wanting to fit in. But actually, the real joy, I think, comes from belonging. And if you decide to just try and slot in and kind of forego some parts of you, this is how you disappear, and this is how depression can settle in, and this is how loneliness happens, right? Because you're not fully who you are. And also knowing the difference between to be nice and to be kind. And I'm probably not going to make some friends here, but I generally think that Kiwis are the nicest people, but I don't think that Kiwis are the kindest people.
Yeah.
And for me, the difference between the two is the depth of connection that you're going to have and the outcome that you desire for people. And when you're landing in New Zealand, because it's such a small place, the communities are already tight-knit. And so you're going to be on that outskirt, and people are going to be nice, they're going to be supportive of you, etc. But then to be able to create those deep connection, it's going to take time, and there's going to be a real grief that comes from having left that back home or wherever it is that you were before. And to just give the time for time to do its thing, and to also know that some people would be in your life just for a season. Maybe it's going to be the adjustment season. Maybe you're going to meet somebody else through that. But again, it's all about managing expectation and face the season that you really are in right now. And then there's also a bit of a financial strain that I think we forget to talk about when you move to a new country, because all of the stores that you know, you don't know, and everything is unfamiliar. And so you literally have no blueprint to fall back on, right? So when you're in your home country, if you want to make a bolognese sauce, you go to the store, you know which aisle you go to, you know which brand of tomato can you grab, you know which brand of pasta you get, and you know which brand of mince you get, right? And then when you move to a new place, you're faced with only brands that you have no clue about. It's a different currency, maybe. So you're kind of doing the math, because at the time you still have your home country currency in your account. And then you're like, oh, I still have to buy a car, and I still have immigration fees to pay. Okay, so how much is that in my home country? And it's kind of a bit of a nervous stress that if you haven't been there for a longer time than maybe a month at a time, it's kind of hard to grasp. And then when you actually cook the food, everything just tastes different. I remember the first time that I made bolognese sauce in New Zealand, I was like, it doesn't taste like it should. Because all of the core ingredients just tasted weird. And so there's really nothing that you can fall back on. And I was very lucky that, you know, I moved with my husband. And so actually, you know, we had each other to hold ourselves through what we were navigating. And we have those kind of waves of griefs and homesickness that come when we have specific days For instance, on the 20th of November, that student day in Belgium, which I normally would be partying and drinking, walking down the streets, true story, Belgium has a real drinking history. And, you know, I would be with all my uni friends. And so grief just comes in waves. And so having financial security when you move to a different country, I think, is a big thing. Knowing your worth before you move. So, for instance, with the immigration system in New Zealand when we migrated, my husband was worth 170 points in the immigration process, and I was worth 10. I went to two different schools. I studied for 4 years after high school, and I was worth 10 points. And my husband was worth 170 points. So I got a spouse visa, in case anybody was wondering, because with 10 points, you don't migrate to New Zealand. And so I think knowing your worth is also very important, and being aware that paperwork is just that, it's paperwork. And I don't know if anybody has ever talked about, also when you have to get a spouse visa, the process where you have to give proof of your relationship being genuine, and, you know, photos and bullet points of your relationship, etc. And there's a bit of a rawness and exposure that comes with that, and you have no clue who's going to read that. And I think this is part of, I think, an emotional weight that comes with moving and relocating that not that many people talk about. And immigration is a black box, right? You send your paper in and then you have no clue what's going on. And obviously, New Zealand is probably one of the nicest place to have to go through that experience. I know that they do the best that they can with the amount that there is. So I'm absolutely not like bashing New Zealand immigration, but it's a reality that as a person who is migrating, you are living that and navigating those emotions without any support. And it takes time. We had a residency application go through just before COVID. And then I think it took us 2.5 years to get our residency. And at that time, you know, you don't know if your work visa is going to renew. You're tied to one area, and then you can only change one thing. So if you're made redundant, which happened to my husband, then you kind of have a stress of finding a new position, etc. So having a financial safety net is a great thing to have if you can. And we moved without kids, right? We had one child, and if we had to migrate anywhere else, I'm not sure we would have the lightness and dream and hopes and psychopathic faith that it's just going to work. And we had that kind of innocence of, oh, the world is our oyster. I think that now that we're 8 years older, we've kind of maybe lost that a little bit. So if you can do it young, maybe do it young, because you've got that stamina and that belief, and you don't yet have that kind of harsh learned dose of reality that comes with adulting.
I'm nodding my head in strong agreement here. It is intimidating facing the inhuman bureaucracy of things like immigration. That said, dealing with immigration NZ is shockingly efficient and pleasant, actually, has been my experience, considering coming from the US. I mean,
yes.
Everything's relative, I suppose. I've been reflecting on the, I want to say almost youthful naivety of optimism and just, yes. Things will work out. I don't know if it's a patience decrease or a just less acceptance of discomfort and unknowing that comes with age. But I definitely, my more adventurous side is definitely taking a backseat to comfort for some reason.
Well, I think it's a responsibility thing, right? Because when you're at university and maybe your parents are still sending you an allowance and you have a job that maybe funds part of your bills, and then everything else goes to partying and drinking and maybe shopping for shoes. I'm not talking about experience here. You're you know, your responsibilities are low and you're still in the dreaming phase. You've chosen to study something that you think is going to nurture your soul, and you're still completely dreaming about all of the best case scenario. And then when you get into adult life, reality sets in, right? You have a mortgage, you have a child, where if you're hungover, which that hasn't happened to me in a long time because I'm doing a year without alcohol, but if you hang over, your child doesn't care that you're hungover. You know, he's still up at the crack of dawn and going, "Mom, come and play with me." Or, you know, if you're sick and you don't have any family here, then what do you do with your child? The first time that our son watched television was because my husband and I'm sorry to talk about this on the radio, but we both had gastro. And we were just like starfishing on the floor in the lounge. And we just turned an animal documentary on TV. And that's the first time that our son watched TV, because he was hypnotized. And we're just feeling like we're dying on the ground. And when you live through those experiences and you have to dig so deep to find the stamina to keep going, I think part of that kind of crushes your optimism. And I'm a very optimistic person. I'm genuinely a dreamer, and I tend to see the best in situations. But I also think that there's reality that needs to set in, right? I mean, last year we had a landslide on our property. And that was $22,000 to fix. We got $1,700 from the insurance. And I mean, you know, when you have shit like that that happens as an adult, you still have to face it. And I think that slowly kind of crushes hope in some parts.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's a bit doom and gloom, but
it's real life, right? So yeah, that's why we are here, to talk about real life, and really appreciate your conversation. And
Thank you.
Always appreciated your honesty and, you know, the way you look at life. And you said you're a very positive person, which I think helped you a lot in this journey, right?
Yes. Well, I always like to say that you get to hope for the best and plan for the worst.
Yeah.
Right? Because either way, you're prepared. And maybe that comes with high-functioning anxiety, where you literally spend so long kind of dreaming about all of the different outcomes that you could have. And then the one that comes up, you're like, okay, yeah, cool, I know what to do, because I've actually, like, seen it through the end.
Yeah.
And I remember I found a freebie online a couple of years ago, which was specifically for entrepreneurs who were dealing with high-functioning anxiety, to how to navigate the doom and gloom and the fear that really comes with running a business, right? Because my worst-case scenario was, I'm going to go bankrupt in my business and all our assets are going to be seized and we're going to end up living under a bridge, right? Like, that was my worst-case scenario in business. And the freebie was walking you through, actually grab the idea and run it all the way till the end, and look at the probability of your worst fear happening. And my husband and I were very privileged that we have moms who can come and support us, maybe send money, whatever we need. So the chances of us living under a bridge are genuinely slim to none. And that was actually very helpful for me when I launched my business, to go, actually, my worst fear is just not gonna happen. Mm-hmm. So let's just imagine the best.
Yes. And you were saying about your parents. How is that they are so far away from you? Like, do you connect with your parents or your family in Belgium? How many times do you visit them, or how is that for you?
We went back twice in 8 years. So the first time was August 2019. And I remember I went to see my husband and I said, my entire intuition, my gut, everything is telling me that now is the time we have to go, because we don't know when's the next time that we're going to be able to go. And so in August 2019, we flew to Belgium. We came back in September 2019. And in September 2019 is when COVID started in China. So I'm very glad that we listened to my
intuition. Very good intuition, right?
And we went back in December 2023. And we are flying this year to Canada, and we're meeting up in Canada with my mother-in-law. And the following year, we're meeting up with my mom somewhere in Asia with my sisters, because we no longer want to do that trip all the way to Belgium. It's just too long, and we don't actually have planes landing in Belgium, so we have to land in Paris, and that just prolongs the trip even more. On the way to Europe, it's nice because then when you arrive with your child who's been like screen fed for 48 hours, you can just go, "Mom, catch." On the way back, it's not as fun. But I do talk to my mom at least once a week. We video call. Mm-hmm. And compared to when I was an exchange student here back in 2009, that was Skype, and we had to book an appointment. And when the phone would ring in my host family, Wi-Fi would go out, and so the connection would break. And now I get to just ring her through any of the many apps.
It's amazing. Yeah.
That do video calls. And we have a weekly catch-up with my son so that my mom gets to spend some time with my child. They do maths together. He officially does maths better than I do. I have a sheet of paper and a pen. He doesn't, and he gets the result quicker than I do, and his answer is right. It's a little bit insane. And, you know, my mom still has two other daughters. I'm the youngest of three, so she's got three other grandkids. So she's not fully alone. I think it's a bit harder for my mother-in-law because my husband's an only child. And so that's a bit harder for her because she's all alone and her only grandchild is here. So she's thinking about the grandparents' visa, but we will see what happens. Yeah. They have like multiple video call planned during the year, mm-hmm. and they found a website. I think it's called Board Game Arena, where they play board games online, and it's really cool.
Oh, that's amazing. And they talk in French. French. And how is your son with French? Is it... is he replying in French still, or
yes?
Oh, nice.
So he has a bit of a Kiwi accent in French,
which is a bit so sweet,
which is adorable. And he struggles a little bit with the most common things that native English speakers struggle with in English. So with the auxiliary in English. So with the past tense. I mean, to be fair, I used to double my past in English. I used to say, I did went to the beach yesterday. That's something that we do a lot. But his French is phenomenal. He reads in French beautifully. And we've just offered him, if he wants to do the CNED, which is the long distance French education system that's been designed to work alongside the education system of the country that you live in as an expat, and so that he could maybe have a European high school degree as well. And
oh,
so
amazing.
He said yes to that, so we will see how long he sticks with it. But my husband and I both thought that if we were him and if we had the opportunity to go study in Europe, we would probably want to do that. And also university in Europe is like, well, when I was at uni, it was 1,200 euros per year, which is a hell of a lot cheaper for us as parents than university here.
Yes.
So that would be really nice too. And so we will see if he sticks with it. And gosh, we're going to have to learn all the French kings and queens, which we hadn't had to learn as Belgians. So that's going to be interesting for us.
Yeah, that would be nice.
But no, he speaks beautiful French, and we do nurture that.
Yeah, I have a question related to that one. You mentioned your child is 7 years
yes.
old. Yeah. How you find, when he go to school, he need to speak English. Do you think the teachers are open to allow kids to speak another language at home and speak English in the school, or do faced some challenge in that area, or how has been that part in New Plymouth and the school system?
We love the school system in New Zealand. Mm. You know, in Belgium, you start school at 8:15 and then you finish school at 4:50 in the afternoon, and the trees are caged so that you can't actually climb them in the
courtyard. For real.
Yeah, for real. so we love the freedom that came here. French was never a problem at school here. They've actually found a couple of other French kids in the school, and they kind of introduced them to each other, which was really nice. And they did get the flag wrong. They keep thinking that we're French and not Belgian, which is not sure if it's interesting or if we've reached the point where it's becoming irksome. But overall, they've been really, really supportive. And we do hope that the high school that our son's going to go to will take into consideration, if he does do the second, you know, studying on the side, that maybe if he has study periods, that he could maybe do that at school or something like that. But so far, everybody has been very supportive, and he speaks English like a native Kiwi anyway, because he went to daycare in English. So overall, we haven't had any issue, but my husband and I both work in English. We're both fluent in English. Gosh, the IELTS was stressful. The English exam, right?
Oh, I hated it. Yeah.
Yes.
I
hated
it too.
You probably didn't have to go through that.
You have perfect English, Brian, right?
Yes. Well, he studied English, so, you know, he has an English high school and university degree, so you didn't have to prove that you could speak English.
All three of us
had to do that. So everybody has been super supportive. They've asked us about, you know, national holidays and things like that. It's been really good.
Nice.
Yeah, I think that is good to know for people raising kids in both language, the native language and English. That is good to know for our audience as well.
Yeah. Beautiful. That was great. I would have loved to have more time with you, Emily, right? The time is passing so fast, and I knew that you are so resourceful and you can give so many good things for our listeners, especially when it comes to, you know, migrating to another country and opening your own business.
Thank you.
How it is as an entrepreneur. So we really appreciate your time. Do we have time, Brian, for another question? Or should we... No.
As much as I would like more business coaching and maybe some makeup tips.
Makeup for you, right?
Yeah. Men can wear makeup. It's a thing, Brian. You can.
I'm sure they can. We too have faces.
That's amazing, right? So looking forward to another show with Emily.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And looking forward to see her more here. And thank you for today. Thank you, Maria, for coming. And thank Brian for guiding us so smoothly through the microphones. I
did
can't
my
do
best.
This. Yeah, Brian does great on the buttons. I'm really awful. Well, so
thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me. It was amazing. I always love being a guest, and I'm a chatty human being, so radio is actually a great fit for me.
And we can talk about that. Hopefully you can help us with the show.
Yes.
Thank you.
Cool. Thanks, Amelie. Thanks to all of our listeners in Taranaki. Everybody have a great week. Thanks so much. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.